su annotazione unica, no? Sui profili. Let me start by introducing myself. My name is Mamadou Bokoubaye. I'm well known in Champagne. I'm the portfolio committee chairman for telecommunications and postal services. I'm not going to chair session today, so that we can all have a process for us interacting around. And I think the program does allow me for me to come and the introductory remarks, which I'll do later. But let me just introduce firstly the facilitator for our session today, Prof. Farrenson, who is a lecturer at Rice University. Asked him to assist us today in carrying out session for seminars. And I'm not this time myself, but teaching a lot of things. I'll come back later. But I think it's important just to say compliments of the new students, helping me as colleagues. We love each other, many of us, and looking forward to a really prosperous new year. Over to you, Prof.
Good morning, everyone. This is a very, very warm parliamentary Western Cape welcome to everyone. It's really about celebrating the 20 years of a Democratic Parliament. And we are really, very honored here. We have very good speakers, people, individuals, organizations that have walked this journey, the telecom reform journey of 20 years. And a lot of what is going to be discussed today and tomorrow is really a reflection on that. I've got to set the scene. If you Google a document called the RDP document, from reform, it's about 1994 paper, just before the advent of our democracy, just of the born of the new democracy. This is what the document said in June 1994. The second concept at the time in Clarica was as follows. For every black person, there was one telephone line for every 100 people. This was 1994. There were 60 telephone lines for every 100 white people in South Africa. So that was really the context, the content at the time. One telephone for every 100 black people, 60 telephones for every 100 white people. Let me just read what the RDP at the time said. All South Africans should have access to a modern, affordable telephone system. So I'll read it. This was now 1994, just over 20 years ago. All South Africans should have access to a modern, affordable telephone system. It's interesting, if you go through the document, it says stuff like, all schools, clinics should have telephones within the next 2 years. So this was sort of envisaged that by 1996, all schools, hospitals would have telephones at the time. So here's the point. If you were a traveler then, 1994, and you look back, you may very well say, nothing has changed. The issues are still accessibility, affordability, and whether the network is modern and reliable. It was important in 1994, and it seems to be important now. Or you can be the other traveler. Looking back, you say, everything has changed. Yes, it's affordability. Yes, it's accessibility. Yes, it's a modern network. But it's no longer what it used to be. Or you can be the other traveler that simply says, it seems that some things change and other things have not changed. This 2 days together we are going to reflect on that journey. So in a sense, there's going to be a preview. But you will also get a sense of a review. Now that we are where we are, what is it when we look forward? I will get on the next 20 years and the legacy and the contribution that we can all do to this journey. So, you'll see, those are the three grand themes. Accessibility, is it universal? Affordability, and then, is it modern? Is it state of the art? Is it 2G, 2.5, 3G, 4G, 5G? And that's really, really the key theme. So if you look at your program, both today, and if you look at the program for tomorrow, it's about that journey. And it's about a reflection point. Given what we've experienced, what do we do with those lessons going forward? And we have the privilege, we have the policymakers present. They adopt policy. We have the department present. They formulate policy. We have the regulator present. They implement policy. The only one not here are the courts that review and set policy aside. But we don't need them here for the purposes of this reflection today. The first speaker. I just want to confirm. Madam, can I presume that you've got your objective rationale and then the introduction? Okay. Let me call on the chair just to do the objective and rationale for the session. And then we're going to have Everfraser preparing himself for the presentation that looks at from 1996 onwards. Thereafter we have Lucy on the role of the ICT sector. There will be a panel discussion or just a reflection, questions, discussions thereafter, and we'll break for lunch. We understand that there are travel issues. We want to keep to the time as much as we can, so those that do need to leave on time, need to leave on time. So, if I can call upon the chair just to present the objectives and rationale.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Members who are here, as noted, members of the board and chairpersons of boards are here, and members of the CEOs, the executives, the members of the industry, the academy, all invited guests. Let me take the opportunity just to welcome you. I think firstly, let me explain. The Minister, Deputy Minister, and the DG of Telecommunication couldn't be here with us today. So the candidate, Makotlala, is starting from today, so they are unable to hear. But let me just explain so that you are not surprised. But there's a team that is coming led by DGP. I just want to know that they are ready to sort of develop the conversation. I think for me, it's very important, and I think I do appreciate for your response. Because unlike many meetings that we have where you find a full council for the committee, we ask questions, all the members ask questions, clarity, comments, and then leave. But this I come today is more around dialogue, for us to have a conversation around what is happening in terms of the industry. As the portfolio committee will regard the seminar as very much critical, so that we can hear the thinking and the views of the industry. So that we have the conversation, we are able to look at what are the issues, what are the concerns, what are the things that you think are happening as well as lawmakers should be doing right that you're not really doing, or where are the issues, the constraints that should be able to address. And if it is that, as creating this platform for the community, because we think democracy, we cannot be able to to advance democracy without being able to have a dialogue. Governance is about enhancing dialogue, understanding and listening. And our principles in terms of the constitutions are very clear. But we would govern on the basis of listening to the views of the people. And for us, this platform is very important so that you can have this dialogue and understand what your issues and your thoughts are. But again, I think in that Parliament's ideal place to facilitate this dialogue by providing progressive macro and microeconomic policies, and for us to have necessary regulation for business prosperity and job creation for our people. What our interest as politicians is to see those who have mandated us, giving us the mandate, prospering in their lives, becoming greater. And our mandate is to make sure that in every area that we operate in, we are able to achieve it to our full ability. So if you are to take the access of ICT in South Africa, or even today, because I think even still today when you look at demographics and you look at your birth cancer and access to ICT, it tells you the real power of the country, the history of the country. We should have the most people who are disadvantaged are those who are living in the outskirts of the rural areas. Most of the loss of segregation that has led to people are being segregated. And therefore, access to services was segregated to that extent. And when you look at rural areas of ICT, you can still say that inherently, it could have been through whether we can argue delivery or Indian, not delivery, but you find that the most urban areas are the ones who have the most access to the resources in ICT. And ordinarily, you say that happens precisely because infrastructure was readily available and easy to deploy for even operators in the urban areas across. Than in the rural areas where you need more capital, more investment to go and do that. That's what we need to still cut the ground where we come from as a country. Right? Only that doesn't happen. And this dialogue more says to us, should we still have that situation 20 years down the line? What are the things that we need to do to be able to tell the good about so that we have better equitable share across the country in terms of access to ICT? ICTs operate in society in which power is unevenly distributed between individuals, groups, classes. The ICT sector also occupies a space which, in constant being contested, which is subject to organizational, technological restructuring, economic, cultural, political constraints, for commercial pressure and changing professional practice. As the changing controls of this space can lead to different patterns of domination, and agenda setting to different degrees of openness and closure in terms of access, patterns of ownership, available gender, type of people, and range of opinion. I think from the days of the white paper, I think Rob was trying to take us to the previous time of the RDP. When we look at 1996 white paper on telecommunications, the state's vision for telecommunications has been one that runs with the provision of basic universal service to advancement, the provision of basic universal service to disadvantaged rural and urban communities with a delivery of high-level service, capable of meeting the needs of growing South African economy. And the question is, since in 1996 when the white paper was done, where are we now? Telecom reform in South Africa has taken place under condition of dramatic social transformation. In the mid-1990s, South African telecommunication policy was hailed as drawing on international best practices, while at the same time seeking to deal with the country's particular historical issues. Are we able to say where we are reaching right? We still absorb the best practices globally. Are we regarded as competitors globally? Are we a key role player in the international space as South Africa is the ICT? If we've lost that space, or are we maintaining it? Are we seen in the global context as one of those countries that people are listening to when it comes to ICT. If not, what do I need to do to get ourselves back on track? In terms of we shouldn't be far from other countries in the continent, because if you look at it in terms of development, look at it in terms of the economy, we are better than them. But are we able to say the same thing in terms of ICT? And others with IQ, I was informed that in terms of digital migration, we are lagging behind. As I said, but it's another discussion for another day, Prof. But I'm just saying, there are things that are happening globally. Are we on par in South Africa and everything in terms of that? Prior to the telecommunications sector reform in South Africa, broadcasting and telecommunications sector were related primarily at the provision of the Radio Act of 1952 and the Broadcasting Act of 1976. This essentially gave government complete autonomy over all telecommunication and broadcasting activities in South Africa. In 1996, the Radio Act of 1952 was replaced by the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which came into effect on 1st July 1997. The telecommunications climate led to the passage of the Telecommunications Act, November 1996, which fundamentally transformed the process. This act was enacted to make provision for the regulation for telecommunication activities other than broadcasting and to establish an independent regulator, the South African Telecommunications Regulatory Authority, in line with the goal of developing a transparent and certain regulatory environment for investors and consumers, and to contribute towards building a single and one well-functioning market. A key regulatory challenge that faces us, and I am glad colleagues from ICASA are here, is that defined section 3, subsection 4 of the ICASA Act, which provides requirements that ICASA is independent and subject only to the constitution and the law, and must perform its functions without fear, favor, and prejudice, and must function without any political or official interference. Its actual powers and level of institutional independence differ greatly with respect to broadcasting and telecommunications. And as a result, ICASA finds itself, I think, if you allow me, the program director, from one sitting, there's a bit of some schizophrenic legal position where ICASA is sitting. The advent of convergence and digitalization pose a new challenge as two historical separate services are brought together. The integration, even after the formation of the ECA, has been the concentration on telecommunications and broadcasting. The reality about convergence is that it is dependent on technological innovation and other services. Policy legislation and regulation tend to be reactive. The same has been the case in South African situation. It will always be difficult for the policymaker and the regulator to be proactive in a convergent environment. I think looking back again in terms of what the World Economic Forum report said this year, it highlighted a number of global risk landscape, amongst others are those affecting the ICT sector, such as fiscal crisis, critical information infrastructure breakdown, unemployment and underemployment, cyber security, which is really growing, data fraud and theft, etc. So those are some of the things that are highlighted when the leaders met in the World Economic Forum this year. Across every sector of society, decision makers are struggling to cope with heightened complexities and uncertainty resulting from the world's highly interconnected nature and the increasing speed of change. Fast communication systems from such trade and investment links, increasing physical mobility and enhanced access to information have combined to find countries, economies, and business more tightly together. Last but not least, new technologies such as the internet or emerging innovation will not bear fruit if regulatory mechanisms at the international and national level cannot be agreed upon. So these are some of the challenges that we are continuing to face. And if we are to look at to look and talk about transformation. Just to share, you know, one of the things I've concerned here is that you've got to be able to talk about transformation in the sector, in the sense that from a provision point of view, as I raised earlier, historically in terms of the expectation of our country, where your previous marginalized people are able to have access to land. But secondly, in terms of even the role players in the industry, that the demographics are able to talk to them. But again, if you look, I just want to reflect on the stats that show, for example, in the country here, we see figures show that the number of internet users in South Africa grew rapidly from 8.9 million in 2011 to 12.8 million in 2012. The total number of internet users is forecasted to increase at 7.3%, compounded to 9.8 million in 2016, mainly led by explosion of mobile broadband via smartphones. And for me, this step points out an opportunity to stop seeing digital media as a high-growth middle-class medium, but as a greater leveler that can transform access to information for all classes, in rural as well as in a fundamental way. However, this much is an aspect to internet will mean nothing if we can't address the issue of cost to communicate, especially the issue of data cost. So, I was saying at some point in one platform I was talking about, unless we are able to reduce this cost to communicate, the smart tablet or the smart classrooms that you're talking about, the tablets that the kids are carrying, the smartphones that the kids are carrying, internet for learning, are going to become toys if they can't have access to internet. They have no meaning in their hands if they are not able to access internet. And that can only be sustainable, that can only be accessible if the data costs are affordable. And that's why when Gauteng MEC launched that project and others came out saying it's unsustainable, it's precisely when looked at the cost of maintenance, when the cost of maintenance meaning that access to internet by the teachers and the students, the cost of it, if you calculate it, is very high, and therefore it puts a threat to that project, its sustainability and its life. So it's important for us to really look at that when we have a discussion around this. We are not here to look back and reflect on the past 20 years in our country. This is encouraging recognition of the role that every player in the sector has, especially to members of parliament, must be vigilant in ensuring that legislation and laws that we pass enable the ICT to grow in its entirety. So here to have a conversation for the class system. When legislation comes before us, we understand what are issues, what are the concerns, and what are the threats that we should be looking at. We need to work together to find better ways of addressing South Africa's new ICT risks and build resilience against them. We have to ask ourselves difficult questions. 20 years on, is there a shared or collective sense of comfort regarding the current state of transformation in the ICT sector? When other sectors are progressing well, does the ICT sector have a blueprint? Capitalizing of the ECA indicates the need for the establishment of the electronic communicators in ICT medium. I think the colleagues will be arriving there to really give us, because that's the money that is given to the department. How far are we towards promoting an empowerment of HDI, especially rural women and youth with disabilities? Couldn't this be easily achieved when we put the ICT charter in place? What is the best mechanism for handling what appears to be every ICT player's nightmare, guidelines for rapid development of electronic communication? Improving the standards and methods of teaching and learning through e-connectivity, connecting farmers, and importance of e-health. Other cities are already starting to talk about smart cities. Are we able to have a conversation where we can guide the country to
So those are the instructions that this is what we should go. And know that every city currently, everyone is teaching, everyone is pushing it towards them. And really have to avoid the country to convert. So those are the things that we should do. What is universal services and 20 years later? What is universal services and access 20 years later when many people in rural areas and even urbanized areas are having difficulty to communicate with their loved ones because of cost as well as access to ICT infrastructure in places where they reside? Here again, you need to reflect not only on the cost, I think the infrastructure, the quality of this, the drop cost. That's one of the things that we really have to look at. Let's get to that. How do we get to ensure that access is as well as the quality of the service that we get? Why does the South African extensive network not benefit the country to the full extent for the world and for the connection to many people? Because we've got this infrastructure that is very telecom, Neotel, all the operators, all of them have the network. But in terms of penetration level, we still very low. What can we do better in bringing obstacles to the mass digitalization of the information communication technologies to solve societal problems and provide critical services like e-government, e-education and enhanced health services amongst others? I mean, with the growing threat, yes, today South Africa does not have a threat of terrorism. But you've got to assist us as the industry in terms of e-safety as well. Global trends show that many countries are enhancing in the level of this because there is a technology. Can we safely say that our country is at a level where we are able to utilize ICT to the best ability and support the country to be able to achieve what it needs? The role of South African post office in providing services to the rural areas and urban areas in the post-modern and in the post-digital environment is very critical. The Shanghai Information Society will be truly global and inclusive, much needs to be done to bring its benefits to the poorer in society. I think what is really noticed after the Khotla, ANC, the Khotla, the SG did a media statement, and out of that media statement, one of the key areas that was reflected was around ICT. In particular, where it said that broadband has the potential to propel our economy to higher levels of growth through productivity gains, opening opportunities for the new industry, creating employment opportunities, and modernization of the delivery of the social and economic. We take note because the African Parliament is the leading party and we expect this to be a mandate that is given to the government. And hence we take note of what has been said in terms of ICT. South Africa has a comprehensive infrastructure, fiber optic network for broadband. The challenge that is there is duplication of these networks that different entities have built their own network. How do we resolve this? As Parliament, we are proud that yet again, government reaching with every sector of society has produced national development plans to expedite the creation of a better South Africa. The story of South Africa isn't about people who quit when things got tough. It's about people who kept going, who tried harder, and who loved their country too much to do anything less than their best. It's the story of men and women who understood that South Africa belongs to all who live in it, both who live in it despite their race, gender, and class. It's a story of those who overcame depression and fought for civil rights. And that's what we believe that through this conversation, we will be able to build a better and effective ICT industry, including a program director. I want to quote one of the great leaders, Julius Nyerere, former president of Tanzania. One country that I regard as my own home. I quote, "We can try to cut ourselves from our fellows on the basis of the education we have had. We can try to give ourselves an unfair share president of the wealth of the society, but the cost to us as well as to our fellow citizens would be very high. It would be high not only in terms of the special for one, but also in terms of our own security and well-being, unquote. This will become true if we do not learn to transform our society. If the majority of the South Africans believe that there are those that are continuing to benefit and then behind, will have an unstable country. So as we meet today, I want to say that we have an opportunity to engage and shape what is to become ICT coming 20 years and build a better industry for the better of our country, so that everybody does not feel, everybody is included in the process. Those who are sitting in the margins of Northern Cape who do not have access to telephone should be able to receive that. So that's what we are looking at. Transformation for all of them. Thank you very much.
So again, warm welcome to everyone that has that is arrived now. We are on track. Okay, so rest assured we are on track. The chair has really, in a very, has set down this dialogue, this conversation that we're having, and the back of our minds will see very interesting questions that we're going to deal with when we do the discussion proper. When you look at the overarching policy and regulatory environment, and you look at the market outcomes, the question is, what was South Africa's position? What is South Africa's current position? And what should South Africa's position be? Okay. So there will be a discussion, a panel discussion. I'm going to call on the two speakers, and we'll take questions and the debate in the discussion. So we're just really going to ask you to do the presentation. The first one is Mr. Enver Peter. Highly, for those of you that don't know, highly experienced, having worked both for the department and now for one of the leading industry players. I think he may have contributed to the original formulation of the 1996 legislative framework that we had. So bring him from out of the shadows now. We're going to call him to do his presentation. Let's welcome him in the frame.
Considerations that drove a lot of the thinking and need for the what happened post-1994 and say up to around 2004. And I think as a chair and as the program director indicated, I think the background to this change post-1994 is really that fundamentally South Africa had very segregated services, state-run institutions, which wasn't very different to what happened internationally as well. Either due to the racial classification, services are not just segregated on geographic grounds, but also then on racial grounds. And this presented a number of challenges for creating a new policy and regulatory framework. The same issue around how you deal with monopolies and the development of infrastructure in the ICT landscape. As the chair has already said, after Silas, sort of three key pieces of legislation that sort of was the basis on which sort of post-1994 government developed its policy and regulation or had addressed to change. And those were the Radio Act of 1952, which limited all broadcast and radio communications at the time to government state-run institutions or licensed players in that space. Second key one was the Post Office Act of 1958, which created the framework for running both postal and telecommunication services at the time. And then, importantly, in 1976, the Broadcasting Act, which brought to being the South African Broadcasting Corporation, as well as the appointment of that board and the related activities around that. So when looking at really the consideration around creating this new policy and legislative framework in 1994, I think there was a number of considerations, and I think the program director, I think, wants to do this picture for me, which I'll follow on, which is really around the drivers, I've modified slightly that, around consideration for policy was not just driven by the political requirements, but there was a number of other forces as well, importantly, sort of developments around technology and markets. And I think what this diagram tries to indicate is that, and I think the chair's also highlighted earlier, is that policy and regulation is always, and I think continues to lag behind changes both in technology and markets. There is either significant impact between markets and regulation. So regulation continues to influence the market. However, policy is also then driven by a secondary effect, which is which I'm going to speak about really, which is the sort of historical context of both the domestic context in South Africa, the regional context around where we are located in the African continent and what happens around there, and also in the global context, what is happening internationally that impacts both technology markets and then also the nature and type of regulation and policy that is created out of that. Looking at key technology changes that have really driven the policy framework, I've highlighted a number of those that I think were important for this process. The one is that communications initially was driven, and what revolutionized communication really globally was the introduction of the telegraph in the early 1830s, which allowed for the first time communications over long distances in near real time. I mean, it was dropped at the post office or telegraph station, but it allowed people to communicate without having to physically either meet someone or to send a physical piece of mail to someone else. Then the next revolution was really in the late 1800s when the telephone was introduced, and that then allowed for instantaneous communication between people over various distances, initially quite short, but it expanded over time. And the telegraph allowed for international communication across the world. Then in the early 1930s, the introduction of radio and television then provided an enhancement to this communication, moving away from it being a one-to-one communication to one that was aimed at broadcasting views across large areas and to different groups, so from one point having multiple communications around that. And then in terms of the technology change that really changed the structure both around both the market station at the time, with the introduction of satellite services, which then in the 1960s and 70s allowed for much faster international communication. There were a number of subsea cables that were established. The satellite then provided for the transmission of data across, especially at that time it was predominantly voice services, across areas that were often widespread and inaccessible through physical communication. And then the development around transistors, integrated circuits in the 70s changed also how the all of the technologies about fundamentally how telecommunications was developed was the development of transistors, integrated circuits that allowed them for much broader access to telecommunications services. And then importantly in 1992, fundamental developments that really changed completely how the sector and market policy and regulation was structured was really the introduction of the internet and mobile telephony. And I think what these technology changes then brought about was significant market changes, a combination of push factors from what the technology could do, as well as how the market reacted to providing commercial services out there, and tied to that then what is the action policy by policy makers and regulators out there. So the key market change was to speak about that really drove the 1996 impact on white paper and policy and legislation and comment from that was really around the unbundling of large monopolies in the major markets, United States, United Kingdom and Japan, as sort of frontrunner in the late 80s and 1990s, which really brought about a global republic for markets across and the thinking around policy and regulation. So what this these events precipitated was really that there was now a rise and a need for re-looking at the structure of incumbency and state-owned and national operators in the telecommunications sector. The rise of independent regulatory regimes was no longer was the state sole or primary owner of the incumbent operators. And then also the need to look at new models of licensing, how do you introduce competition, new players into the market, and importantly, how do you ensure that the issues around universal service and access, whether through obligations or through delivery of services address. And I think this really has to sort of paint the picture around what is this context in which this policy and regulation framework in South Africa was being crafted. As I said by the chair and the program manager, I think what was guiding a lot of the thinking at the time of the white paper, green paper process was really around how do we not just ensure a competitive ICT landscape, how do we transform society broadly with this technology and the abilities that come about by the application of ICTs and telecommunications at that time. I think at the time, there was a certain context that exists in the world, and say other than for very few markets, there was a sense that you needed to have strong monopoly type institutions to be able to run infrastructure. With most infrastructure that we rolled out at the national level, whether it was utilities in terms of electricity, water, sewage services, it was always done by state-run large infrastructure providers. And with the sense that this utility model provided the best efficiencies or the greatest efficiencies for the market at the time. I think that there was also in the sense that with the changes globally around both the funding of these large institutional of the state-owned incumbents, that there was a need to look at how do you then start liberalizing this market. However, still looking at the South African context at the time, that then needed to have really targeted market interventions to address the issues around universal service and access. And I think that's why there was a term coined at the time around managed liberalization. Because the sense was that the market at the time was not ready to deliver on this mandate of universal service and access, and that there was still a very important role for the state to play in terms of rolling out infrastructure to geographic areas and various communities. And then, as I said, this is all going to be shaped by the significant international changes, both at the IDU, then at various markets within the US or the United Kingdom, to start to move away from a single incumbent to provide all services. As also said earlier, around the concerns around the internet and around the growth of mobile services, I think at the time no one really thought or foresaw the dramatic the dramatic or growth around mobile communications. I think there was always a sense that the way to reach communities, people were still around using fixed lines, and that mobile communications would be a overlay on top of its fixed infrastructure that would provide services to a small component of society. Fortunately, that situation changed dramatically. The mobile service became the primary thing in communication. And this then allowed for the splitting of various entities, and then also the emergence of independent regulators, but also the sense of creating these converged regulators that address not only telecommunication landscape, but a number of other adjacent sectors that were then playing in a similar environment. Then importantly as well, a number of privatization and competition initiatives driven, and as people started understanding that the market was maturing and had an important role to play in both ensuring that the access to services as well as the cost of those services needed to be reduced, not just through the state intervention but through this growth around competition. So what the slide just speaks to is really how this sort of process and call it moving away from sort of being policymaker and regulator to a situation where now there was no sense of creating an independent regulator away from the policy making, and then also creating different layers of services as opposed to focusing on individual institutions to play a specific role. And importantly, looking at how you segment the market and develop. Of course, at the time that which is post the 1996 white paper process of policy and regulatory process, the emergence of the internet also then sort of drove convergence of a number of these sectors, which then again provided significant impetus to rethink around how do you regulate the new environment. It's no longer driven by just technology specific, or I should say sort of technology silos, but there's a growing convergence around both the technologies and the services that's provided around. So that's really sort of a broad overview. I think I won't go through the detail of this, but I think this just sort of outlines sort of what were the pieces of legislation that brought about this change in South Africa's policy landscape. So say telecommunications, focus on both competitiveness of the industry, addressing the changes around technology, as well as looking at how you then address issues around universal service and access. Not be related to a number of institutions that were created. I think this then led up to a number of other services, and I think this change around both regulate as well as how you hold institutions and create business around the drive around the internet, what it means for South Africa led to the promulgation of the Electronic Communications Protection Act, which then provided or attempted to address this change in the market around both the importance of the internet as well as the rise of e-commerce and issues around cyber security and criminal activity that had moved away from physical crime to the sort of online crime and continues to be an issue to be addressed. I think think what's also important to highlight is that there's a number of key institutional structures that were either reshaped, in most cases fundamentally shaped, and in other cases new institutions created. This is not an exhaustive list, but it's just a list to highlight some of the key changes that were driven both by this change in the technology, as well as changes in markets, and then also the need to build capacity in South Africa. I think in that list, other than the Universal Service Access Agency, there's a number of skills development and training institutions that were created through various pieces of legislation. And I think it's critical when we look back to say how do we both participate in the process of global policy and global policy and technology development, that we also ensure that we build capacity in South Africa, skills in software, satellite technology, whether it's in broadcasting, internet skills. But these are critical parts to remain competitive, as well as to build capacity within our regulatory policy framework. And I think that's really what this slide really looks at addressing. So, what were really the drivers around the development around policy and the regulatory framework? As I said, at the time, no one had really foreseen the growth and the success of mobile applications. And then also the changes around technology markets and how that created opportunities for service-based delivery of services. What was the focus at the time was to say that in order to ensure access to quality, affordable services, there was a need to build significant infrastructure. Infrastructure was limited both geographically, and even within that, limited to certain communities. And in order to do that, infrastructure-based competition was the driver around the policy and legislative framework at the time. And important to be able to look back and say, what is the right approach? I think it's difficult to say. I think there's a case at the time for infrastructure-based competition just because there was limited mechanisms and levers at the time to be able to roll out the required infrastructure. That is changing and has changed. There was also a sense that there was market failure. One is that the market was underdeveloped. There was no competition. There was luckily at the time, which then limited options around allowing a market-based competition to deliver services and access to communities that needed to do that. And it was important that the policy and related framework at the time, and currently as well, look at how you can use the competitive forces within the market to ensure that access and services are provided to all communities. And then what this framework started to put in place was really the sort of building blocks to create effective competition in the market. I think subsequent amendment and change to legislation has looked to build on this increase in competition and market to drive development. However, not neglecting the important role that the policymaker and regulator need to play in ensuring that it addresses instances of market failure where they emerge. Then, in conclusion, I think having look back at what was what had taken place. I think, as indicated, there's always a sense that because the policy making and regulation really is reactive to what happens around technology markets, global trends, there's never a perfect science to be able to develop the appropriate policy and regulation frameworks. However, it's important that policymakers, legislators, and regulators look at what are the key drivers that are critical to addressing the objectives of universal service and access, issues around consumer rights and the right to communicate, and then she's looking at how do we ensure that we remain globally competitive as a country, to the sphere. And I think what helped to us this is that the policy and legislative framework that was developed in the early 90s was really driven by this transformational imperative, both in terms of transforming who provided services, who had access to services, as well as transforming the nature of our sector from one that was isolated and driven by international technology developments and not innovator in that sense, with a need to innovate and participate as a leader in the development of technology. And we've seen that through the growth of our mobile sector, and how it's led a number of developments. And obviously the policy and regulatory framework, policy, legislative and regulatory framework provided this context for that to take place. And then importantly that we continue to provide access to services, whether the services were voice communications in town, whether they're now broadband services and access to the internet. And then importantly, what the legislature needs to think about is how do you address issues around the disruptive nature of technology and what that means to legislation, policy and regulation. And I think that's really just to point the context, and I'm happy to take any questions, or I'm sure it's going to be part of the discussion. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I hope you've got the essence of what Mr. Fraser was saying. The 13 years sounds more and more like the policymakers are really dealing with the issues of experimentation, exploration, trying to seek a framework, yet having to respond to all the disruptions that came from technology and from outside of the country as well. I hope members find the documents themselves very useful. This document in particular is a very useful document in terms of really mapping the 15 years of this program of reform. I'd like to call on the next speaker. The next speaker is Ms. Lucy Abrams, who is an academic at WIT, has also worked for government in monitoring capacities, and has sit on a few boards as well, so a highly experienced academic with government experience, and she'll be talking to the topic of the role of the ICT sector. It sounds to members that it's a lecture, because she is a lecturer, alright? You may be called upon to put your hand up as well and respond to questions, but I'll leave that to Lucy. Are you okay, Lucy?
Multiple stakeholders being able to play their specific hands tied behind their back, because that's the way to mainstream ICT. When in the main presentation we spoke about the Telegraph, I was worried for a moment, because it's taken us over 100 years to move from the Telegraph to the internet, but it's taken us a very short amount of time to move from the internet to a wide variety of devices, electronic devices, applications. Everybody now talks about that. And, you know, it used to be that there were many divides when it comes to technology. But one of the divides was between the young and old. And there was always an assumption for a long time that, you know, young people are such good adopters of technology, but old people don't really adopt technology. Well, that's the language. Because young and old adopt technology. Why do you think the mobile operators advertise about Google? Why? People Google are using mobile phones and they will be watching mobile TV. So the key question is, in terms of the role of each of the, let's call them the major parties, the private sector, the public sector, and communities themselves, society itself, how does this all come together to fuel social and economic development? How do we remove constraints if they are there or create enablers to move forward? So we can't ask this question in general. We have to ask the question for the portfolio committee specifically. The portfolio committee on telecommunications and postal services. Mainstream ICT is a matter of interest not only to this portfolio committee, but to the majority of portfolio committees in Parliament. In fact, it's not every single one. Because mainstreaming ICT is a business of education, health, and security, finance. I think there is hardly a portfolio committee that is mentioned. So we start here, but I think the interest of this committee include, you know, the interests of other committees. Okay, the public and private sectors have different contributions to make, mainstreaming ICT, including not only the shift to digital broadcasting, I think we talk a fair amount about, but the shift to e-postal services, which we hear very seldom. The change in the postal service environment is in fact happening. It's not happening because of policy. It's happening because of reality. In fact, the recent postal strikes, not only the one in 2013, but the previous postal strike, saw a shift from those using the postal services, who then communicated with householders in particular, but also businesses to say, what's your emergency? We will no longer be using the postal. So the slow transformation of the post office in the last 20 years has created exactly that creative structure that I think Barry mentioned in his talk. Is that creative production often doesn't come only from inside, but from outside. So I'm raising this as a phenomenon that we, you know, we should just remember as we do this retrospective of the last 20 years, that policy and regulation can change the environment, but also creative destruction can change the environment. The slides are available. I'm not going to go through, you know, in detail the public sector and the private sector role, but they are quite specific, and sometimes there is confusion, because this is a complex world. Sometimes there is confusion, and I suppose very often the private sector tries to do what government should do, but sometimes government tries to do what the private sector should do, and sometimes it works and sometimes it doesn't. So there are big questions, and I think one of my responsibilities is to start the questions rather than to necessarily provide the answers, because I don't think one part of this, you know, these group of stakeholders has the answers. Not like academia has all the answers or anything like that. But let's take Broadband Infoco, for example, established under the Broadband Infoco Act in 2007, trying to find a place for itself, being to some extent involved in providing the national broadband backbone, and now engaging with USASA, the Universal Services and Access Agency, trying to give some push question. And I think open question is one of the questions that should be on the parliamentary agenda for discussion. So that's just my way of referring to, you know, a particular example is government policy, there are laws, there is legislation, but what is the result, what is the impact of this policy and legislative environment? Second, the private sector has brought extensive network and service infrastructure provision to South Africa, innovation in infrastructure and services, and yet it's not enough. It's not enough. So what has been, I think, the two chairs, in a 20-year review, say why, if a fair amount has been done, is it not enough? Is never enough? Have we perhaps underestimated, have role players significantly underestimated the role of importance to IDP and digital technologies? We are not just interested in electronic communication. Electronic communication is simply an infrastructure. It's an infrastructure that must have a purpose. What is the purpose? It's the purpose that we should be concerned with. And the purpose, and the central diamond of the diagram, is that the world, the African continent, and South Africa, is or is becoming a digital knowledge economy. But it can be a strong digital knowledge economy, and it can be a weak digital knowledge economy. So there's a second question. Which are we likely to be? A strong or a weak digital knowledge economy? If we want to be a strong digital knowledge economy, we will have to pay attention to, at the bottom of the diagram, innovating ICT network infrastructure and communication services. And albeit that we have internet access in some places, we have a broadband policy 2013 with a couple of task forces to implement the broadband policy, the National Broadband Commission. Are we moving fast enough? There's a third question. Are we moving fast enough? Because innovation is a really peculiar thing. What is this going to speed up? It speeds up, it doesn't wait for countries or societies or policymakers or private sectors to catch up. It doesn't wait. Innovation has a life of its own. We don't give it a life. We have participated in that life. But to some extent, innovation does have an independent life from policymaking and regulation. And what we find, certainly in South Africa, is the challenge to keep up with technology innovation. For example, in the ICT policy discussion paper 2014, the one that's just closed for notes and comments, there is a set of questions on cloud computing. Cloud computing meaning that you don't have to buy your own infrastructure at Nugent State. This is just one example. You don't have to buy your own infrastructure at huge expense. You can buy infrastructure as a service. You can buy software as a service. And in order, because of the massive scale of IT and electronic communication usage, you store your data, for example, in what is referred to as the cloud, meaning some kind of off-site internet access. Now, the reason why I ask this question, are we making sufficient progress? Is because in the example of cloud computing, the fact that those questions only appear in the policy discussion paper in 2014 means that we are at least 7 years behind asking those questions. Where there are already, significant writings on, for example, cloud computing law, which has been, let's call it, pioneered in many other parts of the world, cloud computing law, which also raises issues of cyber security. I think the chair referred to the issues of e-safety in her introduction. So, I would argue that the environment of innovation in IT, network infrastructure, and communication services is so vast that we are not catching up fast enough. will not on all will not celebrate Omnibus. And this is very important. It's not that in South Africa we have to deal with the legacy of our heritage first and then move towards the digital economy. It's the same thing. We have to do it at the same time. Because if we create a digital economy, we solve not all, but many of the problems. The lack of communication, for example. So we do not want to experience with the internet and with broadband what we experience with the telephone, where very few households and very few firms have that kind of access. What we want today in 2015 is ubiquitous ICT and broadband access in households. Or, if not in a household, for households, that they need easy access within easy distance. The next block, human resource development. We cannot get this without human resource development. I know that I think that technology and innovation and only dependent on our policy makers, yes. But it's not all about people. It's still about people having the capacity, the knowledge, the skills, the expertise to manage complex technologies which become more complex every day, to manage the associated risk, the contract, the efficient utilization of public funds, etc. And we also have on the opposite side of the diagram, the digital knowledge economy, the policy and regulation environment. And I think we really cannot emphasize enough the importance of policy making and even more so the importance of regulation. We have a very peculiar history and culture in South Africa, which I'm hoping that Alison and other people will comment on in their presentation. And that is that we have put up the policy leading regulation. It doesn't have to be like that. It does not have to be like that. Policy can lead and regulation can lead. And they can lead at different times in different ways when they need to. But we are, to some extent, have our hands tied behind our backs because we have a culture of belief that policy must always be. It need not always be. Policy can be, regulation can be, and innovation can be. And these roles are in aim to be at crucial points. We can get, at the very top of the diamond, e-development, which means all of those act independently and in concert. So if we were moving, not just theoretically, but in reality, to a digital knowledge economy in South Africa, we need to be continuously reviewing, not just reviewing because there's an ICT policy green paper, or there's a process, or there's a committee, or there's the next day discussion paper, and the next day white paper. You know, that's very 20th century. It's not 21st century. That's not how 21st century works. In the 21st century, you have to be continuously and constantly reviewing what you have. The raft of legislation, which I've put up on the slide, legislation pertinent to the electronic communications network infrastructure, policy plans and institutions relating to human resource development, you know, policies that facilitate or don't, no longer facilitate because they become outdated, the policy and regulatory environment, meaning that the policy and regulatory environment that was enabling for the time may no longer be enabling. We need to be constantly understanding the effect and the impact of legislation, and while it is perfectly acceptable to have an ICT policy green paper process, ICT policy review panel, a research paper, nothing wrong with that. But one needs a process of constant legislative and regulatory review. Without that, the objectives established in the box at the top of the diamond again, the objectives for e-development, such as those in the e-education white paper 2004, in the e-education health strategy 2012, cannot be met. They cannot be met. Because again, the fourth question, 10 years after the e-education white paper, why do we not have e-education in school? What's stopping us? So, I would like to suggest that really what. But people need e-service. They don't just need service. They need e-service. E-service can be cheaper because people don't have to get in taxi, travel 10 kilometers, pay the land, whatever the case may be. They are attempting to do so, but these attempts are limited. And we really need to rethink some of these initiatives, don't fall in the ambit of this committee. Well, you know, that's a problem, because they do. So I'm thinking of the two from services in school itself, which are not only rural areas, they serve everything. I'm pretty sure by kind. It is the purpose of being built, I don't know if it's open yet. Now, in theory, the Tucson Service Centers are the business of the portfolio for the communications. But really, they're also the business of the committee. They're also the business of the finance committee. Portfolio committee on the digital finance. Because they're also the business of the portfolio committee for the education. Because what services are we offering? You know, so all the services, all the information services offered to Tucson Service Centers are about a variety of government departments. So every one of those portfolio committees has an interest in Tucson Service Centers. And that is what I mean when I talk about e-services evolution. Tucson Service Centers could be, they aren't, but they could be the forefront of e-services evolution to communities. So how are we going to do that? How are we going to make that happen? There are a few suggestions in this particular slide. There needs to be a lot more collaboration. And in fact, that's what the question given to me by the committee is, how does the committee, the parliamentary committee, foster partnerships? And we'll talk more about partnerships in the afternoon. But is really the role of the parliamentary committee to foster partnerships? Like in an interventionist kind of way? Maybe not. Maybe it's the role of the parliamentary committee to ask the good questions, really the good questions, to say what are the most critical questions we can ask to the relevant policymakers, the relevant regulation institutions, the relevant firms that we might like to appear for us during the course of the parliamentary year. Let us formulate the most critical questions that enable all of us to understand why are we moving too slowly towards digital knowledge economy, why are we moving too slowly in creating an e-services revolution. So that South Africa and its communities, the whole society economy, becomes a 21st century economy and society. Thank you. What are the prospects for revolution? The committee will be here for 2015, 2016, 2017, 2018. What can we expect in the next phase, the next push towards the digital knowledge economy, towards the e-services revolution? What will the committee report in 2016, in 2017, in 2018? Thank you.
Thank you. whether you can tell or phone. How can we use it as a tool of the story and she blend our life on to communicate?
Thank you.
important is our ability when the report is to be able to communicate it effectively, to be able to make sure that everybody understands this is one direction that we're moving. And I'll make an example. For example, when we got into the National Development Strategy, National Development Plan, it was very clear that this is the country's plan. Everybody understands that we are developing this plan and we are trying to have everybody behind that plan. So the message was very clear, the message was clear, everybody understood that point. So I think what is absolutely important now and what is needed is to be able to say, before the game strategy, before the policy, and think connect. And I think what as well confuses is because currently there's an IDT policy review. That is the minister is currently taking into process, and then it should later come to parliament that process. But the broader vision is to be able to link all the other ethnic economy, because that's what you're talking about, everything that needs to be done within that space. But that's one thing of my views around the ability to be able to communicate effectively our policies so that everyone moving on the same path and understand what needs to happen. And I mean, you look even in terms of the National Development Plan, the specific areas where it aligns, what it needs to do with the ICT. So it's for us our ability to be able to interpret that and communicate effectively, and this is what we are expected to be doing. There isn't a chance between the two if you are to get what is expected from you. I think Lucy has something to say.
I would agree that we have part of an IDT strategy in cyber screening. But I'm asking myself the question, not today, but I continuously ask this question. Do we need another IDT strategy? I don't believe we do. I don't like the fact that it's called an IDT green paper, an IDT policy review panel, an IDT policy discussion paper, because I think we've got to look bigger than that. Miriam's quite right. If the connection is there, why do we want to re-engineer something which is so recent when we haven't even worked hard enough to implement it? Perhaps what we need, this is just what I think, there's a digital economy and society section. I don't really care what you call it. You don't have to call it that. But that is something which is bigger, which is about policy and strategy convergence, which is not just about individual domains. That's a big problem in our policy culture, is that we have a trade and industry policy, and we have a, you know, every land and area has its own policy. But the world, we don't really one world. It's a converged world. So if we need policy convergence across these different domains, and yes, I don't think that even that policy convergence is going to solve all the problems. If you put technology in schools and you don't deal with the other challenges in education, there's still going to be problems. So come back to the point, I think, where we need policy coherence, strategy coherence and convergence, and we need an inter-parliamentary conversation. My second point is coming back to the question of the role of Parliament, or rather the role of a particular parliamentary committee. And I think the role is about what do we know? Can we find out what is happening with ESA Connect? You know, let's break ESA Connect down into pieces, into all goals. Let's put those goals on a spreadsheet. Let's invite the DCPS, the whole of industry, whoever is the responsible party mentioned in ESA Connect, can they come and report to Parliament on, I think a quarterly basis would be nice. And the Parliamentary Committee can go through that strategy and report and say, first quarter 2015, this is where we are. Second quarter 2015, second quarter 2016, etc. I think we need to have some pragmatism. We've had, like everybody says, we've had enough policy. Let's have some pragmatism. Thanks.
I'm confused. The JFA there is a difference. I still am too dumb to answer it in that way. But my comment in relation to it is simply this. We have components of a national ICT strategy and system everywhere. And that's fundamentally a problem for us as a country. It exists everywhere. It exists in the Department of Education. It exists in the Department of Health with the NHI. It exists in the Department of Home Affairs with the Smart Card ID. It exists in the Department of Communications with the South Africa Connect, or Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services. And then somewhere digital migration is going to be dealt with. The problem, it's all theoretical. We are not writing policies or strategies with implementation in mind. That's one of the fundamental problems we have. Then the second problem, the reason number of countries are actually overtaking South Africa is up to high scale. It's simply because neither the Department of Telecommunications and Postal Services nor the new Department of Communications have got enough authority to interpret ICT issues. What did it take for the National Development Plan to be developed? It took for it to be developed a framework in the building. And that framework put people together to draw and develop national development. If one ICT to actually go down, we need a special change commission. The end result of what we're doing as a country is we take all these components and hope that something is going to come up. All the things that have been said are actually correct. We don't communicate some system effectively purely because it is the center that's supposed to communicate it doesn't know how to communicate or doesn't communicate it effectively. The institutions that are supposed to develop policies, the institutions that are supposed to develop regulations are not talking to each other to implement those issues. And the question is that we fundamentally also have to ask ourselves, do we really need one of that? Do we really need certain policies? Do we really need certain regulations? Or do we simply need to create an engaging environment for these things to happen on their own? Why should we need it when we may not necessarily have the capacity to meet it proper or appropriate? I can take a simple issue. Enva was presenting content, and you then ask the question that we are trial and error, right? But it will continue to be trial and error. We will continue into the future having trial and error in relations because these things are not as simple as they say. Goran Mali, the chairperson of Beret now in Europe, the European Regulator, said last year, existing operators, which the good professor comes from one of them, are actually getting policy makers, including Parliament and the regulator, the three institutions, to proper existing business models. They are no longer available for the future than one. That's the second issue that I wanted to comment on. The third issue is that we need to stop as a country to focus on shortcut. I understand Chair in Parliament like 5 years. And the MPs probably look at 5 years at their head and how the term turned out. But at the end we're going to look in long term. Let's give you an example of what I'm talking about. Some of the things that the regulator is going to be grappling with is started so busy as well as so the future church that I went to the down fight. It's simply this. If we issue the spectrum that everybody demands, practically now, and issue it with the models that were in the LTE 2020 MHz package and all, where we lose sight of 5G in 2020. So, if you want the throughput, for instance, of 1 gigabit per second by 2020 for a school, you cannot attain that by issuing 20 megahertz to an operator. And the policies that are in existence today are such that it's practical. In the NDP, the spectrum trading, the schooling, and all, practical, it's not that. We do not allow operators, we don't. The mechanism that we have today is that we allocate Vodafone spectrum, We allocate MTN spectrum, Telcom spectrum, MTN, that's it. We don't allow them to pull them, to pull the spectrum in order to give the tools that we require in the future. And part of those realities is that the information society that we require. Actually, let me make it simple. Certain schools in Kowloon have given iPad to not them quite good. However, those children, when they are out of school at that time, where previously they had checked that they could use, now they can suddenly not use it at all because they don't have access to information. Have a case that for that. Have we used physical maps? The only way, for instance, we've tried up to now to eliminate theft of devices. What did we do? We created physical maps in our brain and didn't have devices. But then we can only be successful if there's availability of devices. I don't want to talk about digital migration. We simply have to do it. But also, I will talk some of these things. When we look at all those strategies, ideas in conversion tests and when the capacity defined in the basic department of college presidency, gives the authority to integrate that, then you won't have to go to 20 ministries in order to get things done. But I think we have the components of strategy all over.
resign and convert to IPC policy. However, recent proclamations signing about housing in the CLD, despite the fact that it's included in the DTPS policy, has created this sense of inefficiency going forward. So it is critical, we feel, absolutely critical for the optimum institutional framework be re-looked at, and there should be as little overlap and as little duplication. And we strongly concur, and as part of our green paper submission, perhaps for future consideration, the Ministry of ICT to be situated in the presidency in order to promote better ICT coordination across government and in order to enable it to have a more forward-looking, planning-oriented approach. We strongly concur. And that the Ministry of ICT would need to be positioned to be viewed as being authority and a pillar towards social and economic growth of the country, so looking forward for that digital opportunity, as well as increasing investment in the sector. And by positioning itself as a presidential project, the Ministry would need to have greater powers to play that coordinating role, which is so needed, coherent coordination, convergence for the growth of the sector. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to change the language of the conference. Actually, remember, English will only be coming. So, the national support will be coming on this particular network of the strategy. Thanks, sir. My name is Gorsha. I'm from Kitchen, this time for the committee. My focus is going to be on accessibility of the industry. Everyone talks about the freedom of disadvantaged people and how best should they access this industry, but the reality of the matter is that there is lack of that since 1994. Perhaps we must start asking ourselves as to who is really responsible to ensure that the broader society, particularly the freedom of disadvantaged, is accessing this industry. All also players from your natural climate to providers and to consumption. And I can tell you right now that most of those people are absolutely consumers. They are not educated and the ownership is still lacking. Now, the question I ask, who is really responsible again in the government? Is something wrong that the government is doing? That's not right. I was glad when Professor Lucia Brown spoke about fostering partnerships between portfolio committees. Because what happens is that as a department, you formulate policy, and then it comes to implementation, there seems to be a problem, and I can tell you why. Because you formulate the policy as a department. Now, there's no cohesion or talking together of departments. Now, when it comes to implementation, then you need other departments, because at the end of the day, you are not going to implement this in the ICT sector. You need perhaps your small business and other departments to actually implement this one. Now, if, for instance, a small business department is not up in terms of what ICT is currently planning, because I imagine that each department, when it comes to ICT, is an integral part of society as a whole. Not as government, only for government. Because it has been proven that if people are technology-savvy, then the country grows faster. Now, if there's lack of that, it means the society is lacking time. Now we are incorporated since 1994 into the global spectrum, which subsequently means that now we are not free, because whatever affects the global economy is going to hit us very hard. I'm in agreement in general perspective in terms of what our freedom charter does, because when it was done around 1945 to 1950, same thing was happening, something was happening somewhere which the freedom charter couldn't pick up, which was the foundation of the freedom system into the modern value system, which nowadays is the core kernel of the world and affects the people. Today, South Africa, freedom is not a problem. Problem is money. Now, let me come back to the government. What you need to do as a government, I think there is one committee that is lacking. The government needs to create an interface committee. A committee that is going to pull all the other committees together. For instance, if you have a seminar like this, one member of the portfolio committee must come and sit and report back. But also in the interface committee, there must be public representative, because I can tell you, I still can do the account here. How many people are represented here in terms of those here we're talking about, from level elements, network providers, to the people, ordinary people on the outskirts in the village there? And I can hardly tell you, maybe 90% is those companies that are big, those network elements and network providers. But ordinary people are not as well represented. Hence, when it comes to implementation, you will need them at the end of the day. So I am appealing today within our government, from the interface committee, to ensure that whatever each department they sit in there and the appropriate committee to make sure that they're cohesion and talking together. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Program Director. My name is Ivana, so I'm a member of the committee. And thank you for the presentation and that has been presented. Because I have six main questions. I'll start with the last one. I'm not sure if creating more ministries and more committees will help the situation. Because then it means we need to have more resources for people to come in. In the meantime, we're complaining about limited resources to ensure the implementation of policies and stuff like that. And also, when we have to, instead of bringing in the bill before the House, every committee has a responsibility to go out there and have participation. So public hearings will have public participation. So if we have this interface, a community and bring people from all over the world and everywhere to come and participate in what is the role of the community, because we are representatives of the people. So if there's an issue that needs us to go to the people, we're supposed to do that. If it means the community must go and need investigation, because we have a policy that needs to address some problems in investigation, the community has got the constitutional right to go and set up a community room. And all the constitutional requirements of the committee in any part of the country. So for me, the solution is not the creation of more ministries and the creation of more committees. But it's something that we need to discuss. I think also an issue that you raised correctly, that all the parameter rates in relation, for instance, to the seven schools to housing the pilot projects of paperless classrooms. As to whether when they go out, is there a connectivity that is linked to what the chairperson has said, how to communicate. Because the competition out there doesn't lessen the price of communication. Instead of continuously goes up, it is not affordable. So we need to find ways to ensure that the question that was raised by the chairperson of the cost to communicate is addressed. But also, what is the role of the private sector? If government has got this brilliant idea of a paperless classroom, we need to do this, they want the textbook, they have to take their iPads and whatever, notebooks to home to do their homework and so on. Where does the private sector come in to compensate and augment what government is doing? And I also think the issue that was raised by the EC are very important. I think it's a question, pertinent question to revolutionize the industry. Then what after that? Sometimes we find that governments do have those policies that go out there, and the administration has to implement to ensure that it happens. And you find that there is a logjam there, and things don't get their policies, their proposals of amendment of some bill or act, but then when then has changed to become a politician, although the administrator. And you find that that is where the law changes. Somebody will sit with information because he or she is important, is that there's nothing you can do without me signing a piece of paper. And when counting, we had a lot of petitions because we encouraged people to petition on anything. Most of the petitions that came were based on non-paying. And when you go and investigate, you find out why is this company NOP not paying. Somebody is sitting with information. And when they go out there, when they see that they are in the corner, put them in the corner, they go out to the neighbor to say, yeah, politicians are interfering with our way. Then the politician, oh my God, that's in the paper. Which also brings me to the point of what are the role of the media. Primarily it's an issue of the developer policies and developers of regulations do not speak to each other. When the ANC, the ruling party, divides the private sector to come with the ruling party on development out there, and people are still going to be to the house because of the head office, then the head of the headline should be ANC someone private sector to curtail them and tell them what. I mean, those people have to enter. For us to have an interactive approach between the private sector and the public sector. And lastly, there is also the importance of the cyber crime. It is an issue that is very important, that is eating our space now, and what is of worry that we have very limited, I think a drop in the ocean of legal people who are competent in this area, both attorneys and lawyers and or judges or magistrates in this area. So I think it's an area that you also need to be focused on. Thank you very much.
I'm
sure
for the comments on this part.
I think a lot of what I wanted to say has been covered. I think the one point I want to make is that I also have a lot of sympathy for policymakers and legislators as well, because I think the complexity of what is being dealt with is tenfold what it was 5 years ago, both in terms of who the players are, how the markets have changed, how the growth in the sector has also contributed to new vested interests. I mean, the role of the ICT sector in 1994 was very small compared to what role it plays now, and rightfully so. It's important to, as you said, play an important role in a number of other capitalizing initiatives that will change our society and operate. What I want to also emphasize again is that I think there is this need for question again to look at implementation. I think that the policy and strategic framework are out there, and even if they're not 100% the way we want them, I think there's enough there to be able to act and to do certain things that will ensure that you move the process forward and that you don't get stuck on trying to craft the right policy and framework or legislation. Rather look at what the overarching objective is meant to achieve and then act on them. And I think, just going back, I think even the process we need to really look at, I think from the Electronic Communications and Transactions Act, there was also a very different approach to legislation and policymaking. It didn't follow through all the process. I think Andrew spoke earlier in the draft green paper, then the green paper. The ECTF had a green paper, discussion document in one, and from that there was legislation part. And I think because of the nature and the dynamic nature of the sector and changes required, I think that's the type of thinking we need to start implementing, just to move without losing the sense that you need to consult with stakeholders, but not having to drag our processes in this. And I think that's critical for us going forward and providing a broader overarching framework as opposed to trying to provide the detail. So I think we've got enough players, whether it's private sector, civil society, regulators, policymakers, legislators. The players are the ensure that we
going to say. I'm wondering whether we are looking to have a perfect strategy that when you analyze maybe you see using your academic framework, you will find no faults in. I'm wondering if you're looking for that kind of strategy or looking for that kind of policy. Because if we are, we're never going to do it. I was reading a book by Eric Green, if I pronounce it correctly, and Andy McCarthy. They are talking about the second machine age. And they are quoting that by 1990, you had about 700 million subscriptions for mobile phones. Less than 80% were in developing countries. By 2030, you had more than 6 billion subscriptions. More than 35% were coming from developing countries. Now, that was not driven by any policy. That change is not driven by any policy. So somebody has said, perhaps we should not be thinking about any policy, leading regulation, leading innovation. We perhaps need to understand what is driving the changes that we're experiencing around us and how do we exploit that. And most of the and the comment about perhaps getting to the point where we are able to take stock regularly. You should be very careful when you take stock regularly not to lose sight of the bigger picture, because most of the changes that become big down the line have been incremental in time and became very big over time. Because of an exponential rate at which it grows as it improves over time, because the improvement of 1 year is built on the improvement of the previous year and of the previous year and of the previous year, that it gets to the inflection point where it really takes off. So if we're going to assess progress on a regular basis, we should also be mindful of the fact that at certain times we might see small failures that are going to begin to big successes down the line. My suggestion would be, if we are to deal with complex situations, maybe let's look about the 10 possible things we can do and raise them from the simplest to the most complex. And sometimes we become too daring and want to do the complex things. Because if you do the complex thing, if you get right, you'll be a hero. Perhaps you should start with the small, simple things that are addressing the problem. If after you've done 8 or 9 simple steps that you needed to do, and you still have the need to do the complex one, then do it. Chances are, by doing the simpler things, we will be able to make progress. So I guess what I'm saying is, we're possibly committing two fundamental mistakes. One, looking for a perfect document, perfect policy framework. And two, instead of recognizing that the small steps that we can take in the different disciplines will lead to improvements when combined with later stage, we're trying to do the complex one up front. Why? Because the rest of the world has left us behind. I think if we change our thinking, we possibly can catch up.
Thank you, Chair. My name is Amy Mark from Brazil, Mexico. In the same way as Mr. Lombard just spoke, I do think that this opportunity, we tend to be very hard on ourselves and, you know, talk ourselves down. I think the fact that we have a thriving industry that is worth, I don't know, $17 billion, that grows compounded by 8%, is in itself something good. Obviously, no one can gloss over the problems that we have, for the developmental state, that we have many underserved areas, we have a high cost to connect, and so forth and so forth, large inequality still. But my view, what we probably need is a national ICT master plan to supplement ESICON. Successful nations like Kenya have done it, they have met the various value chains of the ICT industry. They looked at international connectivity, national connectivity, they looked at the access portion, they looked at devices, etc., and they have a very good plan of where they can start. To a large extent, I think that the work that DGPS has commissioned through CSIR in terms of mapping provincial broadband information indices may achieve that. So it's probably just a question of the center putting it together faster and delivering and communicating it better. But I think we will be getting there. Sooner.
point that said, I think the splitting of the ministries was not a progressive decision, and I think the committee will need to look into that as to how we will manage that. I think it has caused some alliance in the sector, uncertainty, and some of them need some resolution to the issue, whether it's the ministry is working better together or whether the decision is being reviewed. It will help the industry a great deal. Indeed, Professor Abrams, technology advances can wait for these discussions. We have had these discussions for many years. We have had many colloquiums in Johannesburg, we have had in Durban, here in Cape Town, we have had the captains of industry pronouncing the message, and we continue talking. But as investors, we are not seeing opportunities to invest more in this discussion because decisions are not forthcoming.
I've got two more
hands there,
but I'm worried about the
thank you, Prime Director. I guess let's stand out of the room or either way. My name is Tamika Martinez from MTN Digital Media. And I wanted to pick up on the rather controversial comment, which I completely agree with, of Lucy Abrams regarding the very 20th century process of going through very laborious policy research, pre-paper, etc. And yes, I think many would agree that is very 20th century, but what is 21st century is evidence knowledge-based policy development, which indeed many academics, including myself, do promote. The question is that coming into the timing and the coordinating role, I think this is very much where Parliament and parliamentary committees indeed can play a key coordination role. They have various government departments presenting to them, and the government departments have the various sacred entities which report through them. They receive annual strategic plans of each of these departments and of the state or entities, and that's a very good basis, certainly a knowledge and evidence basis for this particular coordinating role. We have at a very high level, for example, the Presidential Infrastructure Coordinating Committee or Council, I think it is, if I've got it correct. But I wanted to maybe pick up on the other elephant in the room. If the first one was, here you have a committee that's overseeing a converged sector, and yet there's a split that has occurred, it would appear that perhaps a decision was made before the ICT policy review process came to an end, at which stage recommendations would be made regarding future institutional structures, future policy and regulatory matters. But I would like to say that the second elephant in the room is really about power. I mean, we're sitting in the very heart of power. I would say a very important role of the committee is regulating power. You're a regulator, that's and you have various entities that appear before you. You are lobbied left, right, and center, and correctly so. You know, industry and network operators are blamed for lobbying you, but that's their very function. Certainly the lobby people. Your role, in my view, is really to be playing and regulating a function. It is about power. So when we keep on repeating this mantra about no creating enabling environments, well, there's no national government any longer that has the power to do this. In a globalized world, we can talk about creating this, that, and the other, but do we really have the power to do that as a nation state? When certain corporations are stronger than millions of, many countries put together. So it's really a question of saying where does the role of Parliament and a committee that really have unique insights into the information that has been presented before you. If a department has plans to do certain rollouts,
bring that to the department four or five times because it didn't have an implementation plan attached to it. So this is what the committee was told. When the plan came out, indeed it had aspects of an implementation plan, but their agenda was the Broadband Council to be established and yet more. So really just the final point, it would seem again that where the department maybe have failed is something that I'll call mandate creep. So with the previous Department of Communications, for example, you had a slippage into becoming government communications. And maybe it's a good thing that we now have a separate department, very clearly on government communication. But it was slipping into the role of the public Department of Public Service and Administration insofar as e-government was concerned. And either way, nothing came of that. So I think, Chair, that would be the last comment. Thank you.
Thank you, Erica. I'm Rachel, person of Ibasa and yourself. I've got a very brief question to ask. I've got an address as a pragmatist. And I ask a question when I speak to Ibasa to say, South Africa at a stage or number one in Africa. And somewhere along the line, certain countries whose GDPs are far below the ours have passed up. The question is posed to researchers to say, what are the things in terms of their research that they have determined to have had held us back? And I'm looking at countries where typically we were saying in the CEO yesterday that Namibia or something switched over in the digital arena. Just next to us. I'd love to use that as an example. Okay, there are certain things that are happening in other countries that were far behind us at some stage, and things are just happening around us. And those countries, in terms of their economy, they are far below us. What are these low-hanging fruits that we need to be doing as South Africans to take us somewhere and not take us behind? Because we run into a stage where we end up being far below those other countries. Just a simple question.
I think a large part of that question will be addressed by global information system, the whole of Twitter system, so that it could be the rest of the world. This one was particularly from Sasa and Chris S to say, what are those factors that held us back so that they enable others to go later?
Thank you, Mr. Professor. The two comments I wanted to make is, we need to be very careful for not an English person. I think it says not here wood for trees for a forest or something like that, or looking at it proper. The view is let me start with the issue around ministry. When certain months do it, neither here nor there. As long as the clarity of things. It's not a split in ministry, it's a split in responsibility. Then we feel the responsibility in an appropriate fashion. It may be neither here nor there. The red of the color may be seen to be caught in the middle of this, but the bottom line, competition commission reports to all ministries. But it still doesn't stop. Clarity of the board is quite critical. The second issue, our ICT sector, sir, simply does not identify critical issues to focus on. We won't focus on everything. When actually other things happen, whether you decide policy or not. So that simply happens. You've got absolutely no control over it. Let's take an example that we need to focus on is, and as the angel said, sometimes waste time. My personal view is, I can have the privilege to say, is that before the service is a waste of time. My personal view. You do it brought the end of what is called Savarga Connect. You do it, you put it there. Instead of focusing everything around you, you're doing that and doing it very well. You then start scattering your heart again. Maybe the fortunate thing of the student of war, purely because I've been a soldier and all, you never attack an enemy strong point. You concentrate your forces and attack an enemy weakness, right? In our environment, what is that weakness? It's a critical point that can cause South Africa to jump. And what is that? The way I identify it, it's only one. To be honest with you, if we can have an adventure today, put broadband infrastructure, put it extensively, do everything, focus on consumers. When you focus on an example of consumers, let me keep it, I was discussing this with you outside. And I was saying, everybody seems to know what our ordinary people want. But we're not asking. We never ask. What is most blatant thing that operators do that act so that we do? Aspire to data. Single most biggest thing, and I was talking with a good doctor there, and she can give you the figure of one of the operators in money that operators made out of expiring of data. Yes. It's no less than $3 million. One operator. One. I'm not talking about all of them put together. And you continue to focus on all kinds of things, it's fine. But if you focus on end users, it becomes a myth. Indeed, where we stand in Lenaba and other things on the data. A lot of other people were defining universal access to six lines. It was what? 3 minute walk to a picky ball in order to make a call. Is this relevant today? Definitely not. What you need today in universal service is an access. It's access to the internet, access to information, access to that sort of thing. And what Jesus does? It's broadband. The broadcasting of tomorrow is going to be on network. The broadcasting of tomorrow. We're still focusing on digital migration. Good luck. But that's what's going to happen. So we need to identify this critical. It may be one, it may be two, or it may just be three. If we say the answer, can we do this and do it their way? And tie our resources and whatever else into that. Operators will get into the zip line, into the band weapon. Because, while it's critical of the issue of 7-4, I can tell you the positive aspect of the 7-4 is that as you do that, continue to do that as a country, operators start being creative to address that potential demand. Because potential demand. They start being creative to do that. But what is it that, and I want to venture and say, the most critical element we should focus on is making sure that broadband is well out in South Africa. And just see if we won't get digital migration up and running. Because the first time in India I have around and switched off, imagine, neither here nor there. But we can do some of the things as a country if we focus on that. What I'm talking about is digital migration. I can then say, I'm trying to, even there, I'm not sure that you thought I was focusing on selling the set of office.
give people a digital CD. Subsidize a digital CD. It may be more expensive, but perhaps in combination. I'm not saying one can work in isolation of the other. It's possible that you can do it in combination. But it may not be. It's those two elements, the third element. Now, mission for that, then digitalization, standardizing CD. The third element that is always critical for both is content. But who's going to develop content? Production houses? Not a task. Then in YouTube, in all these sort of things, some play around with all sorts of things. If we can focus on those three as a country, the rest will fall in line. That's the naive thing.
Thank you, Andrew. My name is Susanna Gell, I'm from ATN. I'd like anything would like to thank the previous speakers for their very helpful presentation this morning. I would like to just touch on the chairperson this morning. She raised two questions, which I think are quite interesting. The first one, do we observe international best practice? And the second one, what do we need to do to get back on track in terms of development in ICT? So I'll address the first one. Do we observe international best practice? Well, I think in a market that is so fundamental to the prosperity of South Africa, the most important thing for MTN is rigorous market analysis, rigorous regulation, and you can't substitute that. You've got to be very careful because this market requires massive amounts of investment. And I think an earlier speaker alluded to that. So perhaps we can look at EU framework in terms of regulation, robust economic framework. And then, Chairperson, touching your second point, what do we need to do? Well, what are the challenges to growing? It's obviously going to be very close to MTN's heart, and I apologise for that, but for us it's two issues, apart from the spectrum and the lack of high demand frequency, and I think we sit there, it's been flawed today. There's the absence of the rapid deployment guidelines. And an honourable member earlier touched on something, the coordination, there were some views expressed. It's not within MTN for you to even comment on how you want to coordinate your, you know, parliament and how you do things. But I really like the idea of parliament playing a key coordination role. You know, there are, I think everyone's touched on it, there are a number of intergovernmental departments at play here, and we really are being hamstrung by this, you know, this lack of rapid deployment guidelines. And then thank you, Lucy Abrams, for your presentation. It's very interesting, very engaging, and I agree. I think, I don't know how you phrased it, but again, you know, that coordination, that constant and I think you said periodic reviews. Absolutely. I think you touched on some of the issues in institutional frameworks and some of the aspects and the gaps that are lacking. And perhaps periodic reviews, I think, would strengthen policy going forward, possibly from regulatory institutions and many of the major governmental stakeholders. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Henry Kinnan, Vodacom. Chair, to me, there are three issues I want to comment, and I think this is a very interesting discussion, which, in my view, that we, through the Chairperson, of course, we need to have this ongoing kind of conversation. Last time we signed this conversation, we need to define as such. The first issue I'm really very excited personally. And here I will not hurt you. I'm very excited about the education project in Gauteng, those four schools and those seven schools. Because if you look in terms of the Asia model, the Asian countries there, Chair, their economic growth was pointed significantly on the relationship between the ICTs and education. Those are the two fundamentals. And through that, and they were coming from backward models of the economy, but immediately they interface education and ICTs. Their economies propelled very significantly. So therefore, for me, I really say that it's a beginning of what Gauteng is doing. point A or step one, then I think we must allow them to leapfrog from where they are. And therefore it's the responsibility of the private sector and the public sector for us to make sure that those models that housing is starting to do, we must make sure that it goes to other provinces in a significant way. So I support that. And I think, therefore, Chair, as you were saying, there's a lot of work that the portfolio committee is going to do. And I think that interface between the education and also the portfolio committee is going to be very difficult in my view. The second issue, Chair, and I supported the question of coordination. You remember, Chairperson, last time we were here, I raised the question of the role of municipalities, stroke ICTs, or telecommunications, the infrastructure that municipalities are building. And because it contributes to the cost of communication, but also to which extent from the coordination talking about that the portfolio committee will have some kind of oversight or some kind of engagement in those municipalities. What does that, first and foremost, there are no ICT skills. There's a shortage of ICT skills at that level. You know. Then secondly, they are implementing the telecoms network and all that and so on. And after that, there are no people that are human resource to go and implement or monitor and manage. They depend on consultants. The question is, what do you do in making sure that there's that coordination? Then secondly, it reduces the cost of telecommunication, and then you allow the private sector to play in that space. Those are the three issues that I wanted to raise. Thank you very much.
I think there are quite a number of things. But see, it's very interesting how the discussion is happening, Program Director, for where I'm sitting. And we just had a quick chat with Lucy, and I'll come to the issue that you raised, that there are various different views that are coming across. I'm not so sure if you are picking that up on various issues. And you can imagine for a legislature that's sitting here, what it does. I'm just trying to highlight the challenge. But if I'm to wake up tomorrow and I have legislation before me, as the chair of this committee together with members, with its various views. So I'm trying to say, let's acknowledge part of the challenge, what causes, even some of the weaknesses in policy development. That we at times don't speak in one voice, or we do not agree. Certainly academics and Lucy and Prof would say, and I think I quoted other academics, but most of the time it's quite good when you don't have the same view because you just have to justify where you are standing. But the same concerns that we are talking about in terms of policy, the same concerns that we prepare as an industry. So that when we speak, we as legislators would have an understanding where the issues are. I'm just making this as something that becomes part of the challenges as explained. So put yourself in my shoes sitting here, listening to these many voices. And tomorrow, while I make up the speaker says the legislation or the ICT policy review before the committee, because part of the issues that are coming through chair, yes, others are saying it's necessary, others are saying no, it's not. But what is in the best interest of this industry and the country? Because failure to have the similar conversations in terms of our voices, if we speak in many voices a different language, it leads to us, and I'm going to say us as legislators, taking what makes sense more to us. I'm not so sure whether that's what could have happened in the past years, but I'm just putting myself in the shoes of those who would have And that's why I think the conversation is important, because it's amongst all of us. And we can hear the views that are coming across this conversation. But the other issue that, Chair, I want to come to is, yes, there's a number of issues that are more even around the issue of the strategic plans and all that. Accountability is very important. And I think we acknowledge from the committee side that robust engagement with the sector, robust engagement with the department, ensuring accountability and not only us in this world. I think that's the nature of the committee, how it is and how it has turned on through until so far. And then we can confidently say we've gone to push to different angles and we've asked for that question. And CEO of ICASA, we know that even during our annual plan, there are entities we took, your strategy is too wide, go and revive it, the department and all that. And we've literally said, if you come with, because we're going to go into the process now of strategic plans and budget review, and said, if your strategy comes, this may will not adopt it. That's our strength. That's our truth. But there are areas where you do not have any tool, and you try and maneuver around them. For example, the issues of regulator when it comes to the operators. We are going to have to look at more intensively to say what are the things that we can be able to do as a tool or utilize as a tool to channel decisions towards the right direction. And for me, this conversation helps because when the process started, that's why we wanted to have this discussion. Because the minute we have a policy before us, the focus now is on the content, Prof. It's not generally for us to have an understanding of where the issues are. Because we are expecting that legislation, that policy to come through to us this year. So it will assist us by that time. We would have had this conversation, we would have processed what has come through to us as issues. The other thing that I want to go back to is, and allow me to disagree, the issue of centralizing things in the precedent. I think we will set up the wrong precedent. The fact that the National Development Plan was centralized in the presidency for it to go, there's been many other achievements that have surfaced. For me, it's the issue of us being able to hold whoever is given the responsibility to implement the policy accountable. If it's the department, I don't think it needs to move to the presidency, but the Ministry of Telecommunication is important and needs to remain. And therefore, the mechanism is to ensure that the Ministry of Telecommunications needs to do what is expected and mandated to do. And we as legislators, we have that responsibility to ensure that that happens. Because otherwise, we'll end up with now everything that is going to... We do acknowledge the importance that when something is in the presidency, it has authority. But equally, if you have... because in the presidency, you will not have one of the weaknesses. I'm not sure if you understand the setup of the presidency. You will not have a department in the presidency. And by its nature and based on the legislation, it's a coordination office. So its role is to coordinate. It has limited activities, it can be limited in terms of what is done. That's why when something is in the presidency, most of the time the budget is not held in the presidency, it's held somewhere else. Because of the nature of the office of the presidency. So to take what I regard as a backbone of the economy, ICT, to move it into the presidency, I think it would be a mistake. I don't think it would be a wise decision. But to have, and this comes to the point of the members, to the point of separation of the departments. I understand from the point of the industry there might be concerns and really getting into that and understanding the issues. Where I'm sitting, I think the separation was a good idea. And I'll tell you why. Yes, acknowledging that the trend over years, other cultures are moving toward conventions and all that. But I look for a point where I'm sitting and could be limited. While sitting as a legislator, I've gone to do an analysis of the work of the portfolio committee over years. And what I found as a trend is that issues that related to ICT development and ICT more specifically took 20% of the time of the committee. 80% of the time was on broadcasting. That's where we are sitting as legislators. Now, with the separation of the committee, we are able to focus our energy and our attention to ICT issues and postal services. And the other committee is able to focus on broadcasting issues. So from where we are sitting, this is our view. I'm just sharing, colleagues, so that you have the understanding while I'm listening to what is being raised. And the ability to be able to do this much that we need to be doing and to drive ICT, because I believe as well that ICT would be able to assist us as part of growing the economy. Now there's another issue that I think colleagues would have spoken to but not really that. I think one of the issues that we need to look into is the research and development in ICT industry. Because if we are to talk to future, and I think that's what the CEO of ICASA was trying to raise as well, to say today we are talking about digital, but TV is likely to be broadcasting with your mobiles and all those. How much as a country do we invest in research and development, especially on ICT, to talk about the future ICT? What are the trends 2020 now? And so that we start preparing for it. Otherwise, and there's a colleague who said that we sometimes too harsh on ourselves. I do agree to a certain extent. But we've got our knowledge in terms of ICT. We are lagging behind. And somebody raised, I mean, when we have the money, I know a colleague from MGN was speaking. MGN is on retrenching people as we speak. There's a measure of possible or potential measure between Vodacom and Neotel, the transition that is, and its impact, what it's going to be. So all those things that are happening, the issue of the delay in digital migration, the issue of delay in broadband, the rollout of broadband. I mean, I've been fortunate enough to travel. And many countries, in terms of the Wi-Fi facilities and just, it's higher than us. I mean, for example, you can't walk into OR Tambo today and just sit anywhere and access the internet. You need to be in the lounges. So any person that is within the building does not have access to Wi-Fi. Whereas if you look globally, it's different. You walk into hotels globally, at the reception level you have access to Wi-Fi. In South Africa you've got to have been checked in to have access to Wi-Fi. I'm just making these examples. This is an ordinary person. If I'm to say that we are competing globally, small things to a consumer is what they evaluate the industry on. The quality of network, that if I talk, we know that when it's December, I will not have a conversation for more than 30 minutes without my phone cutting off. On the 1st, all of us assume that by 11 o'clock the lines are going to jam, so we must send our SMSs being here before. So that by 12 o'clock, 5 minutes past 12, I will not be able to make a call. These are the small things, but the impact on the lives. And you can imagine if within 12 o'clock midnight there's an accident, I need to call for an ambulance. And I do not make that call. And by the way, we do not have a toll-free line in this country. We still don't have it. Emergency line, what other countries have. It's in the legislation, but we still don't have it. a dear trophy, not the one that charges me, but that I can call from the cell phone, therefore it's free, because I'm, but just a dear trophy. So I'm saying, these are the things that are a reality. When we talk about us as a country not reaching the state where we are to compete and say we should be global, that one would look into. And we are not being harsh on ourselves, but raising the issues which are pertinent. So indeed, the issue of our role, I think I've spoken about it, the issue of strategic plans and the issue of what needs to be done. And for us as a committee, this conversation assists us, because when we get into engagement and have committee meetings with entities coming before us, because some of this engagement enhances our ability to be able to do our work. So we appreciate the engagement, because they help us to think and grow beyond where we are thinking. Again, the issue of school connectivity, I think we had a meeting with operators, and we're still going to have a follow-up meeting with that one. On school connectivity specifically, because that myself as the chair of this institution have agreed that it's going to be an issue that each year we go into. Until we have right tools, we are able to have the seamless system. Because we didn't have the same anomaly. Because now, that's why I made an example of Gauteng. Gauteng is the bar high. It's paperless, as they say it. And currently we're not providing for that for the whole school, you know, those things. And the cost, where is the money going to come, and the regulatory issues. But it's something that we believe that each step we take towards that should be able to assist us. But we must be able to say within this period of time, this is where we need to be. I think those are just my few comments. Thank you.
There are lots of issues that were raised. I'm going to respond to a few. And I want to preface what I'm going to say by saying that I'm not speaking as an academic. I think there are many people here who know that I've been a practitioner in many, many, many parts of government. So yes, I have the academic insight. I think it's very valuable, but I do appreciate the practitioner environment. If I mention your name, I apologize, but I think just a few points. It doesn't mean that the other points were not interesting. Post has moved to the internet over many, many years. It's not a new thing. It's not a 2014 issue. Post has been moving to the internet ever since we've had internet. Digitalization, I really like the point that Mr. Pongwana raised, because perhaps we missed that boat. Perhaps we should be looking at IPTV and mobile TV. We already have mobile TV licenses that have been issued. And I was just consulting with Emma about the cost of a smartphone or a tablet versus the cost of a digital TV. I think the tablet and the phone is cheap. I know it's different. I know it's not as simple as that. It's not a big screen. It's a very small screen. You can't have the whole family looking at a small screen. So, yeah, there are issues, but perhaps we've missed that DTT migration. Someone asked about what's holding us back. And there's been quite a rough debate here about, do we need policy, don't we? Do we need regulation, don't we? I think the answers are different for different groups in this room. The private sector is here, but there are, the regulator is here, CETA is here. CETA and broadband infrastructure are very different from the private electronic communication sector or the regulator. very different, and I think what being expressed is that people have different frustrations, or rather these groups within the broad sector have different frustrations. I can understand that the private sector is frustrated by, you know, policy, because for the private sector, if you've got one policy, it's kind of enough. Especially now in 2015, you know, it's not 1995, where we're just setting out and nobody knows where we're going. We've kind of got to a point where, to some extent, we know where we're going. Perhaps more so with the private sector. There are problems because the diffusion, internet diffusion, broadcast, digital diffusion is just not meeting expectations. So it's not that there are no issues, but I can understand that, you know, the continued policy can be an irritation. On the other hand, for the private sector, regulation is fundamental. People have used the example of victim regulation. You can't move. We can't move in our current state with the current state of spectrum regulation. It's not only about allocations or assignments or licenses, it's also about the new technologies which drive new spectrum regulation, dynamic spectrum access, which is recently a discussion paper being presented to ICASA. TV white spaces, we're still in the early days of that, and that needs to move quickly. Otherwise, we'll just be in the same state that we are with digital migration, because we'll take such a long time to figure it out that we'll miss that boat as well. 10 years is not a long time. Perhaps what frustrates the private sector, the regulator, or just everybody, is if your regulation is controlling and not enabling, you don't want it. Just don't want it. You want enabling regulation. What does that mean? That's what has to be figured out. Not controlling or prescriptive regulation. But we do need regulation. Can't get away from it. But CISA and Broadband Infraco don't want that kind of regulation. In fact, it doesn't apply to them. It's got nothing to do with it. What they require is a different kind of enabling environment. Perhaps leadership is, you know, here's the policy objective, this is where we're headed, okay, now go there. But I don't think you can have no policy. You know, Singapore, I think when we mentioned countries that you can use as examples, then there are a few countries that come to mind. Singapore may be one of them, because I think that's one of the inputs you said. You know, they came from a very backward economic environment. Basically, they had nothing. They had no industry. They had no agriculture. They had no industry. And they said, what are we going to do? Oh, services and ICT, let's do that. And that's what makes them. But they had policy. Their policy was Singapore Intelligent Island. And they've long supported the policy ideas that they had in 1994, whenever they started that process. But it did kind of concentrate people's minds. And I think that's what the kind of policy that institutions like CICA and Broadband Infraco need is not just something that focuses the mind. And, you know, the last time we had anything that, and I don't think it focused the mind at all, was EGOV 2001 out of DPSA. The last time anything was said about formally, explicitly, said about e-government. So surprise, surprise that, you know, we're battling to see where we're going. So I don't think that policy or regulation should kind of cloud us over the head to the extent that we can't see where we're going. It's got to be clear, it's got to be enabling. Yes, it can be short, it can be a lot of things. It's not a panacea, it's not the answer. But I think my final point is performance. And I think that's what a lot of people have said, is just performance. And I think that's perhaps where, Chair, we do converge. We do actually agree
despite the things that we disagreed on, not disagree, but had different perspectives on, we all agree that we need performance. Performance, performance. That's what it's all about. Because performance breeds performance. If you don't have performance, you can't breed anything. So, a mechanism, thanks.
I think there were lots of very useful comments made. I wanted to make three five points. So one is that I think, just to emphasize again, I think that what everyone is saying is that we need some form of clarity of purpose. I think that's what Dr. Mini was saying, and I think everyone else's comments echo that. And I think that clarity of purpose is probably the objectives we need to define for the country. What is it that we want to achieve? A lot of people have spoken about it, and we don't often have to document them, they are out there, and just affirm it. I think the second thing, the second point I want to make around that is that I think a big reason for us sort of often being seen as following or losing our position within the competitiveness or the ICT environment is also because we have quite an established market that has very strong interests, and it's often very difficult to change things. And I think what the experience is, and going back into history, I think what fundamentally changed the US market was really that the Department of Justice decided to break up AT&T. They made a strong, considered decision that changed the market completely, it was considered, and they said, I mean, that changed how that objective and that clarity of purpose was implemented. And what I wanted to then leave the committee with is really sort of four thoughts around looking forward to what the future should hold. So one is that I think it's critical that this resource management, that is the responsibility of everyone, but particularly the legislature and the regulator and the policymaker, is important. And resource management is not just spectrum, but other facilities, whether it's rights of way, whether it's spectrum, whether it's access to light poles, all those types of things are critical resource management issues that need to be addressed and thought of when addressing the sort of purpose that's embarked upon. The second issue is competition and access, and I think we need to provide enabling environment that facilitates that, and that competition should drive the expansion of the sector and the delivery of services. And this should be intervention where those markets fail. And again, the act of intervention, whether it's a resource management issue or whether it's a policy or legislative issue. The third point is really on the demand side. And I think what is critical is that we need to understand how this whole consumerization of technology is changing the way people are consuming and technology, services, broadband. And that's also changing the way we need to approach the sort of framework of policy and regulation to say that it's not just a sterile service that we're offering to specific points, but that there are individuals and people out there that are using it. And then lastly, I think that the one point that is very important going forward is the issue of net neutrality and how networks are going to be delivered in the future, what they need to provide, and how we then address that as a country. What are the key building blocks that we need to think about that makes it not that we can future proof it, but that it's forward looking and not just looking at the year now. Thanks.
Okay. I just have two comments to make. One is I support what Pakamile was saying in terms of putting specific pillars on the ground, you know, in order to get ICTs and to make a meaningful contribution in this country. I just wanted to add two to the three that he has said we must look at. I think we know that, you know, mobile devices and so on have really penetrated our society in a very significant way. I think that, perhaps maybe, organizations like CETA and Infraco needs to be looking at, what kind of mobile solutions, citizen, servicing solutions, we can come up with so that you can speed up the pace of delivery. you know, especially working with municipalities. I mean, those are the people who are in the forefront in terms of our citizens. The other one, I mean, that I think we need to add to the pillars is the e-skills and research and development. I think as much as, I mean, we're talking about technology advancements and so on, we will get to a point where we don't have people to actually enable those technologies in order to get people to actually do what needs to be done, you know, or even use the technology at hand. So I think that will be the two that I would add to the three that I believe that, I mean, the committee needs to consider. The other issue has been raised by Lucy in terms of the postal services. I think it is important that, I mean, you know, that we revisit the very business model that we have adopted for the code and basically start looking at different ways of ensuring that, I mean, you know, postal services that we know them today can still be relevant tomorrow. Because, I mean, the past becoming irrelevant and we know, I mean, the issues that are there. And those were just the two points that I wanted to make.
Thank you very much. So we will break now from that to the top part of the offer our third layer of the program stage. We have four presentations after that, and this really will deal with the issue of sustainability, regional, national competitiveness, how the community acts, and so on. So four presentations, very good offer. We'll go now to each back part one, the time to consume.
I hope this is the point of the dog's leg. I don't know.